Hello and welcome to Sobre Mesa Podcast. My name is Owen Gilmartin, and today we're talking Spanish cinema and the best films of 2023. Before we start, you might already know that we are asking our regular listeners for a small donation, some support to make this podcast sustainable going forward. So if you've been enjoying our content this year, this is going to be our 26th episode. We're hoping to expand further next year, but we are incurring certain technical costs to do with producing the podcast. And so we're asking our listeners just to make a small donation to help us move forward. Thank you to all of our listeners who have already donated. Your help, your assistance is really appreciated. So please, there's a link in the episode description for our Buy Me a Coffee account. If you can, we're just looking for a small donation. We really appreciate it this Christmas. So that said, let's get on with the episode. My guest today is Anita Fuentes. Anita is a PhD candidate at the Complutense University here in Madrid. So I hope you enjoy our discussion of the best of Spanish cinema from the last 12 months. Hey, Anita, welcome back to Sobre Mesa Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed our conversation about this time last year. You were saying just before we started this interview that you sort of see an interesting contrast, I guess, between the focus maybe of Spanish cinema last year, which was maybe centered on a sort of rural-urban divide, a lot of films that dealt with that as one of their sort of key themes. And then maybe this year, where we're seeing a lot of films that are coming from sort of feminist and LGBTQ perspectives. So how do you see cinema? Obviously, 2022 was seen as one of like the best years in Spanish cinema in the last couple of decades. What are some of the films that have stood out for you in 2023, and how do you see the year in Spanish cinema in general?
I think this was actually a great year for Spanish cinema. I don't know if I can compare. In fact,
very hard. Yeah,
it is really hard, and in fact, it's true that last year was really good for Spanish cinema, but I think it, you know, is like slowly building up to be really good, because before 2022 came a lot of incredible films in 2021 and 2020. Well, 2020 was kind of a weird year, but like in 2021, films were pretty good as well. And I think maybe the pandemic made it so that by 2022, the films were already like, there were more productions, people were like going back to the movie theaters, there was, you know, a lot more promotion, it was way less about watching movies at home, and like the experience of like watching a movie surrounded by other people came back, and I think the sort of excitement came back, and the, you know, like award ceremonies came back as well. So I think that was part of the whole like, oh my God, 2022 and 2023 have been so good because there was some time after the pandemic had passed already and everybody was like more ready to make films and also to like watch them more consciously. And I think there was a lot of time, I think, during 2020, 2021 to think of new ideas and to come up with new stories that I think in the end ended up being really very powerful and very, there was a lot of quality. There's been a lot of quality, yeah. And there continues to be a lot of quality. I mean, I don't want to talk about TV shows because I know we're talking about films here, but I think in terms of quality this year, La Mesías by Los Javis, which is, you know, it's a miniseries. That show is like top quality for me in terms of everything, in terms of acting, in terms of the story and the topics that it deals with. You know, it's at the level of, you know, many of the Hollywood productions that we watch on streaming platforms. In my view, and I think a lot of critics have seen it in the same way, where it's like, wow, it's just like such a good show in so many ways. And we're not used to that, Spanish audiences. And I think Spanish film is also reaching that level of quality where it's just like amazing. In terms of what you were saying, that there's been sort of like a shift in topic, I do agree that if last year's films were marked by this debate of the rural versus the urban in Spain, we have, you know, Asbestas, we have Alcaraz, of course, we have Suro. And I think there were many other movies touched upon this topic, even if it was not maybe like so much at the center of the message. But I think this year there's a common theme, which is very obvious to me, at least. Maybe it's because I want to see it, but I can definitely see it, which is gender, right? So
yeah,
be it women's issues and perspectives on or LGBTQ plus issues, which I think, just to add some context to this, I think it makes a lot of sense because 2023 has been both the year of Spain's so-called trans law and the year of the only yes means yes law. And although the movies were being made like years before that, obviously, because it takes years to make a movie, right? I think it's not a coincidence that they came out in this context because laws also take years to be passed and to be elaborated. And so it's been kind of like, you know, that all these movies have come out, I think, at a time where the public discourse was very much revolving around issues related to gender. Irene Montero, Spain's former minister of equality, was getting a lot of media attention, even if most of it was being bullying and harassment. But, you know, she was all over the news and all over social media. And I think culture is definitely a good way to measure what people in society are thinking about. And I think people were thinking about gender-related stuff. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think more generally, Spain has one of the largest, most powerful feminist movements in Europe. I mean, there's very few comparable marches for international women, say, anywhere else in Europe. When you think of what you see in Madrid every year, it's incredible. The numbers, etc. And yeah, I mean, Irene Montero obviously became a key figurehead, but in a sense, you know, like she was riding a sort of wider wave. And that's, I can't think of any other real country in Western Europe that has such a broad, active, and sustained feminist wave as in Spain. So, I mean, I think probably in part the films reflect that as well.
Yeah, and I think the fact that there are so many tensions within feminism. Is also, I mean, it's sad that there are so many tensions and divides, but I think it's also a sign that the feminist movement or movements here are very powerful because there's so much debate happening constantly around gender-related issues. And so, of course, when there's a lot of debate, there are a lot of opinions. So for me, it's, you know, I have my own opinions about all these things that are being debated, but I think it's only natural that, you know, in a country where feminism is so central now to many other social movements and to politics, I think it's only natural that people have disagreements. But on the other hand, I think many of these disagreements that are happening within, you know, feminist debates are also slowly shifting. And I think culture and film in particular is showing that shift and is also contributing to the conversation in a way that I think is very effective because I think films have this, you know, like, power to capture stories and to tell and to discuss political matters from a very personal and makes it much easier to empathize. And so I think the fact that 20,000 especies de abejas, which is about trans childhood and about how families approach the situation of adjusting and understanding to trans children and to, you know, sort of changing the way they view gender as this like completely enclosed thing and seeing it as more fluid and as something that is not, that doesn't come with your biological, let's say, sex, but I don't really believe in that either, but it's too complex to get into. But I would just say that, you know, people, that families are starting to see that. And Estivaliz Urresola, the director of 20,000 Especies de Abejas, I had the pleasure to interview her on my show in Canal Red. And she explained to me that she worked with these families that were like, you know, parts of organizations who were working with other families, and that it was not really like the job of the trans people and the trans children to change anything in their minds, because they were sure of who they were and they were just existing. It's really society, and a huge part of society are families, right? That needs to adjust the way they view the world and the way they view people and the way they view gender, in order for everybody to coexist and for trans people to live better lives and to not be as oppressed as they are right now, because their lives are constantly in danger, which is horrible. I think the trans law was a great step, but I mean, you know, what Ayuso tried to do in Madrid, or did in Madrid recently. I mean, it's terrible. And so every little thing that we do to get the message out and to help people understand. I mean, I told my great aunt to watch this movie in the theater. I didn't tell her what it was about. I just told her you should watch it. And she is someone who's, you know, like, she's not, well, she has some conservative views that I don't share. We talk about politics all the time. She's someone who's very well informed, and she has very well-formed opinions. But she's not someone who you would say, oh, she's a trans feminist. I wouldn't even say she identifies as a feminist, although she has very feminist ways of thinking in some ways, right? And she texted me and was like, oh my God, I loved this movie. And that's the power of movies, that you go into the movie theater and you're like, oh, maybe I don't know anyone who is trans, or I don't know any families that have trans children in them, or maybe I do and I just don't know because they don't speak about it. And yet now I have been exposed to this reality, and I understand it from within, and I can actually empathize with a cause that maybe is not my cause, but that, you know, like, it doesn't hurt anyone for trans people to exist and have good lives. And so why should we be opposed to that? And I think movies are great for those stories to actually impact people and for people to understand that is not like something that leftists, politicians care about, or like these very foreign people that they are never exposed to because they only hang out with like cis straight people or whatever, talk about. It's like something that could happen to anybody. It's just very repressed because there's a lot of oppression. And so so that was my favorite movie of the year.
But I think that's exactly what you're saying. In Spain and pretty much elsewhere, you know, politicians, media are seen as very polarizing figures. They're not going to convince anyone on the other side of the divide. Whereas this film, Benigno de Space, is just a beautiful film. I mean, it's just and it's told really well. And it's one of those things. I mean, some filmmakers are really great at this. You know, how do you make a film from a child's perspective in general? And then how do you make it from a trans child's? And there's a beautiful naturalness to this. It takes place in summer. It's a Basque Spanish Basque family, if you want to call them that, who are living in Bayonne across the border in France. The start of the film, they take the train across the bridge into the Basque country in Spain and go into the village of the mother's home village. And it's sort of this, you know, I guess a summer where the father stays behind. And, you know, yeah, this child, she wants to call her, I think she begins calling herself Coco. And then at the end is a Lucia, she calls her. Like, she's, and she is sort of, I guess, over the summer, find she has a bit more room, a bit more space to actually maybe explore herself. And then, her mom, who is, I guess, as you're saying, we're talking about divisions in feminism, maybe is coming from an older generation of feminism, not necessarily anti-trans, but maybe not completely attuned to the reality of it and what it means to have it.
If I can interrupt you.
Yeah.
I think the mother's character is very interesting.
She is interesting.
I think she's not against it.
Exactly. She's not against it.
She's not against it. And in fact, ideologically, I think she very much supports trans rights and LGBTQ rights, and she tries to let her child be whatever she wants to be, right?
That's what she keeps saying.
But she can't emotionally, from an emotional place, she can't fully accept it. And it's such a good example of, you know, when we're very like clear about our ideas, I guess, about, you know, how we position ourselves in the ideological spectrum. And yet when it happens to us or to someone near us, it's so much harder to actually accept it. And that's when you see your internalized transphobia, misogyny, racism, Islamophobia. I mean, that's when you really see it, when it happens at home or when it happens to someone close to you. It's when you see that, oh yeah, like maybe I'm like trying to support and like going to all these marches and like participating in Pride and dressing in sort of like an androgynous way. And then your child says, look, I'm actually a girl. And you're like, what? And everything around you kind of breaks down because you're like, what is happening? Like, what do I do now? There's a lot of, you know, this sort of hypocrisy. And it's not even like a bad kind of hypocrisy. Yeah, I just think it's, you know, internalized transphobia that you don't know is there until you have to actually confront it and until you get out of your comfort zone. And this is what happened to this mother, was that she was comfortable in her feminism. It was very ideological, but actually realizing that her kid was trans made everything sort of like change for her. But another thing that I thought was very interesting was all the different perspectives of how different women approach this issue, because you also have the figure of the aunt who's like, you know, like a big support for this child. And then you have the figure of like this other, well, you have the figure of the brother.
Who is key, I think, and is
like really beautiful to also see. And the figure of this other character that's a girl, she's, you know, a cis girl who's friends with this other, with the main character, was Lucia. And how children can be really supportive. Sometimes we, you know, we say, oh, children can be so cruel, but also children are a blank slate. And, you know, we ruin children by teaching them certain things that I think they see as completely natural until they're socialized in such a way that they can no longer see these things as perfectly normal and natural. And I think this movie does a really good job showing that. And then you have the grandmother who's like religious.
Yeah.
But she does love her grandchildren. She has like a really big conflict also understanding all of this. And so it's just a really, I think it's a really good movie because it manages to show without judging any of these perspectives.
Yeah.
It shows many, like multiple perspectives on the issue. And then it's very open to interpretation in the sense that it doesn't try to teach you anything. It doesn't try to change your mind. It just shows you a reality and it says, do with it whatever you want to do with it. And that's what a good movie does. And that's, I think, how a movie with a political message becomes successful, when it doesn't impose anything onto the audience. It just shows a reality to them and leaves it kind of open to interpretation for everybody to then understand it in the way that they think makes sense.
I agree. I mean, the multiple perspectives is quite interesting, and the reactions, I mean, what you're saying about the children is definitely true. Like, I think the brother's reaction is quite nice, how it develops towards the end, etc. And then, obviously the other young girl who they meet at the bee farm, she just accepts that Lucia is another girl, etc. Whereas I think you get a nice contrast, I guess, in the local swimming pool. There's that scene then maybe where with the other young girl, maybe a couple of years older, and what you were saying, you know, children can be so cruel. I guess there's a, I mean, I don't even know if there's a cruelty. I think it's just like a non-understanding, or, you know.
Well, it's taught cruelty.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's a beautiful film, really, really engaging, you know, 2 hours in the sort of Basque summer, really, really enjoyable film as well. And I think, yeah, it's, I really recommend it. It hasn't been released internationally as far as I know. So I guess all our listeners outside of Spain will get an opportunity to see it in the new year.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Because that's what we're coming on to, because I think one of the things we talked about last year, we didn't really have time to go through all the films, but one of the films we didn't talk about last year, which was released, I think, at the start of late November, the start of December, neither of us had seen it at that point, was Asbestas, which became obviously the big winner at the Goyas and was then released internationally this year. And it's on the Guardian's top 50 films of the year. And it's in, I think the Irish Times have it in their top 10 even. So it definitely resonated, had a big success internationally. It won, I think, alongside the Goyas, it won a number of awards internationally at film festivals. Mm-hmm. It won, what is the French equivalent, the César. It won the best foreign film, the César, etc. So it's been a polemical film. And we're going to talk it maybe in contrast with another Gallega film, another Galician film, Matria, which was a very interesting
I think we should talk about it in contrast to Alcaraz more than Matria.
Okay, well, actually, that's true as well. That is, exactly. I know people who are from Galicia who had problems with this film and felt, I think the director is from Madrid and maybe this, I mean, I've heard other perspectives. I know, for example, probably the most famous Galician contemporary novelist, Manuel Rivas, really defended it and you know, pretty much thinks it's a classic. What was your take on this film?
So let me just start by saying that I'm a big fan of Sorogoyen and Isabel Peñan. I think they make a really good duo. There's a but for sure. I mean, there very often are. And I think in this case, I think I agree with the perspectives that you were talking about. I enjoyed Asbestas, but it was definitely not my favorite film of last year. Like, not at all. It was a good film, of course, because I think there was a lot of quality. I think the acting was really, really good. I mean, I think all of the actors were absolutely amazing. The acting was really good. And I think everything Rodrigo Sorogoyen and Isabel Peña do together works, you know. But personally, you know, from my own perspective, I did not love it, and I was not happy about the results of the Goyas last year. I did not. I don't really believe in the Goyas or any awards. I think they sort of perpetuate values that I don't agree with. And so in that sense, I thought it was, it didn't make a lot of sense to me that, you know, Asbestas just won all of the Goyas, and then there were other movies that presented very different stories and, you know, proposals that I thought were incredibly interesting that didn't win nearly as many as I thought that they would. I'm not a huge fan of, you know, Westerns, and this was definitely, it was defined by so many people as like, at the Western of the Spanish countryside and all these things.
A Western in disguise, etc.
I kind of hate the genre, to be honest. I don't like all this, you know, violence, and I don't like the colonialist undertones of Westerns, and I do not like the way that women are treated in Westerns usually because they're so masculine. I didn't like this movie very much.
So to push back on that, I guess, or in some ways try to subvert that, at least in the last third. So you have this very masculine standoff between, I mean, if we just maybe go over the plot a little bit, it centers on a French couple who, mm-hmm. I think they're both civil servants, or, you know, very professional middle classes. they decide to retire early to follow their dream in setting up sort of organic farming in rural Galicia. And the locals have other ideas. They're trying to sell off the land in this area. I mean, this is actually obviously where it does coincide with Alcaraz in that sense that you have this sort of tension.
Oh yeah.
Green capitalism, etc. Where I guess the locals here want to cash out as such and sell their land and move to the city in a, you know, what looks like a pretty impoverished area in rural Galicia. And it's been held up by not just, I think at the start it's by the French couple and by a goat herder who's the most sympathetic Gallego character, I think, probably in the film. But it's interesting, like, at what level are we meant to engage with this? Because obviously, yeah, as I said, in the last third, it does subvert that sort of macho standoff in terms of the Western genre. His wife becomes a sort of central protagonistic figure and finds a sort of way through to get a certain redress for injustice, etc.
I want to talk about this because for me, I remember I watched this movie and I was just not pleased with it. And I kept having a lot of ideas about it and about the gender dynamics and about the, you know, dynamics of what was going on between the person, the people you're supposed to empathize with, which are the main characters, who are the French couple, and then the people that are the villains of the story, clearly the villains of the story also. Like, it's sort of like attempts to give you an understanding of why they're acting the way they're acting, but it does not do a good job helping you actually empathize with them at all, which I think is problematic for sure. So there's this article by Brigitte Vassallo, who's a Spanish writer who I really, really admire and whose views I agree with most of the time. And she wrote this amazing article on El Salto, which is a digital newspaper from here, from Spain. And she reflects about why Asbestas had so much success, while Carla Simón's Alcaraz, despite having won, you know, the Golden Lion, the Golden Bear, at the Berlin Film Festival, won no Goyas at all, which was a huge surprise. None of the critics were expecting this to happen. Everybody was shocked. But if you think about it, it's really not that shocking. And Brigitte Vassallo does a really good job explaining it. So I want to quote some parts of the article because I think it was very illuminating for me to read this, because all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, someone has put into words what I've been thinking, but I guess my brain is not as good as Brigitte Vassallo's. And so I had not been able to quite point out the things that were bothering me so much about Asbestas. So she writes, "At the time of collecting the Goya for Best Actor, Denis Ménochet, who plays the main character,
the French farmer,
says that Asbestas said that Asbestas is a tribute to the strength of women's love in the face of men's madness." That's something that really bothered me. And I'm going to continue. "Rodrigo Sorogoyen's film won against Alcaraz, the film by Carla Simón, a Catalan director who grew up in the countryside and who talks about her land, from her land, and with the people of her land. She works with non-professional actors and actresses, neighbors from the area, to tell the story of the end of a world that is her world." So here she's talking already about reflexivity and, you know, the positioning of the creators of these movies. Just to clarify, you know, what the case with Rodrigo Sorogoyen is very different to the case with Carla Simón. He's not from Orense. He's not from the countryside. He's, I think, from Madrid. And he based the script of Asbestas on a real life story that he read on a newspaper, which is completely legitimate and I think very valuable as well, but just a completely different perspective.
Yeah,
it's not an insider's perspective like Carla Simón's, right? But let me continue. Brigitte Vassallo writes, "The definition of women's love seems to me to be a bit over the top, very feminine mystique-like, and very othering. Those others who love as opposed to the neutral subject that enunciates, that makes discourse, which is the man." So we can talk about this later, but that actually sums up what made me dislike Asbestas. because I was pretty bored by the time that we got to see the female perspective, because it just felt like a different story. It just felt like it was forced. But anyways, here's what I think is the key point of the article, and you were mentioning this before.
Yeah.
She says, but I find it paradoxical that Denis Menashev says it in this way, because indeed Alcaraz is a bit like that, like love in the face of men's madness. And that's possibly why it did not win any Goyas, as opposed to the men's battle that is Asbestas. Because we want that love and that perspective, but we want it as a subaltern. We want to admire it like someone who admires a vase, to mention it in our speeches, but we don't really want to apply it. We don't want to actually see things from that perspective. Alcaraz is another kind of love, another way of seeing, not because Carla Simón is a woman, but because she is a woman who has decolonized her view and has made a film that tells a story about our community in all its complexity. For instance, Alcaraz does not turn a blind eye to the racism suffered by the seasonal workers at the hands of the people of this community. Carla Simón has made a film that does not impose that civilizing message of urban progress against the backwardness of the countryside and the people of the countryside, those beasts. So
yeah, wow.
I think what she's trying to say, and she's such a good writer. I mean, I tried to translate it, but she writes it so beautifully, even if it's pretty harsh, the article.
Yeah.
But I think the problem with Asbestas, according to Bridie Basayo, that I agree with, is that in its portrayal of the people of the countryside as beasts, and its portrayal of the, you know, the French couple as civilized, it fails to convey the message that Alcaraz does a really good job conveying,
yeah,
which is who is the oppressor and who are the oppressed in these situations. So the oppressors are not really the people who live in a land that's being taken away from them, and are not the people who are living in poverty and really hard conditions, like, you know, like those neighbors in Asbestas who are, you know, portrayed as these horrible men. I think the oppressors are the multinational corporations that are setting their claws on these lands to, you know, devote them to making green energy that will later be exported at an incredibly high price, you know, to other countries, while they're also making those places unlivable, right? Because they're displacing the people who have lived their whole lives. So I think that is what makes it problematic, that it sort of shifts the blame to people who are actually the most oppressed in this situation, and uses these like civilized French middle class people who are ecologists and want to work the land, but like have not gone through the hardships of actually living there their entire lives, and of, you know, having everything taken away from them. They're the good guys, and then the bad guys are not the real bad guys. And so you're like, wait a second, but like, why is this about that and not about the multinational corporations like it is in Alcaraz?
Well, I agree mostly with your analysis, particularly in the sense that I think you could nearly make an alternative film or a documentary, for example, about the real life case, in the sense that it portraying the actual social antagonism and the sort of differences of interest, because you're right, the neighbors, I mean, there's a lot of legitimacy behind their grievances. I mean, they're portrayed, you know, obviously there's no legitimacy for this sort of campaign of bullying, etc. But you know, the fact that they feel their exit from this quite harsh life in rural Galicia is being blocked by sort of blow-ins who just arrived, and is an interesting one, which isn't quite followed through on maybe in the film. But I guess the question then is, I mean, I'm going to read, I have a couple of quotes here from Manuel Vivas, the Galician novelist. And I guess his point is more, film doesn't, I mean, we're both interested in sort of films that engage socially, you know, but maybe at times film doesn't have to be that. I mean, it's also, you know, for example, I both love and find the films of Terrence Malick quite frustrating, because they're, you know, they only engage in a certain versions of some sort of Heideggerian theme, And when he's dealing with sometimes quite concrete situations, on one level, they're quite beautiful. On another level, the sort of social content has been hollowed out because that's he's just not that interested. But anyway, Manuel Rivas says about asbestos, those who criticize the film sociologically never give evidence. The majority of Galicians who appear in the film are not opposed to foreigners or hippies and are even in solidarity with them. It is a magnificent film, both in making and in the film itself. I left the film in shock. I've seen a great film that stirs the bowels. It is a mistake to reject this film and put it in the nefarious tradition of belittling rural Galicia. This is the story of Cain's crime transposed to the coordinates of our time, something primordial. Yeah, the film is not meant to be a reflection sociologically of Galicia. It could be made in Galicia or not anywhere else. It is biblical. It is about Cain and Abel. So he wants to portray it as a film that's dealing more, I guess, with a sort of primordial struggle. I mean, certainly the opening scene of the film is very distant from any sort of social realism or, any sort of contemporary setting. It's a sort of primordial. The scene is basically of the locals killing a horse in a sort of, in a very sort of primordial sense. You know, it's nearly sort of ritualistic.
Such a good scene.
It's an incredible scene. And that's the thing is, I agree, there are limits because it doesn't really engage. But I guess then the question, engage socially, but then the question is, does all cinema need to?
No, it does not, but it does for me to like it.
That's fair enough.
For me, it's like, you're asking me my opinion. This is my opinion.
Exactly.
I don't want to impose my opinion. And in fact, I love disagreeing with movies. It would suck if every movie was just perfect because I would have nothing to say about them. But I do think it's interesting to approach them from political or sociological points of view because I do see films as they do a lot of ideological work. That's undeniable. Yeah. We were talking about that with 20,000 Especies de Abejas, right? And I think that is just what it is. I think popular culture and films and art in general. But now I think we're very exposed to everything that's audiovisual. And so, you know, everything that's part of popular culture, including film, including TV shows, et cetera, is part of our education. And so if we're being educated by those messages and we're being exposed to this, I think it's good to have voices that challenge them. And I think it's good to open up a debate around those things. I don't think it's unproductive. I think it's incredibly productive to challenge films. I think it's a good film, as I said. I mean, it's undeniable that it's a good film. But for me, it was lacking in some aspects, and those were the aspects that it was lacking in. And I think even though Brigitte Vassallo centers her arguments more about this whole civilizatory message that it sort of sends out, which I think a lot of people in Galicia or in rural Spain were complaining about. For me, it was mostly about the gender dynamics, where I was like, Denis Menochet summarized it really well in his speech, where it was like, yeah, it's like about women's love as opposed to men's madness. And it's like, what the hell are you speaking about? Like, what is this stupidity? I'm sorry. I love this actor. He's great. But are we really talking about this? No, that is such a stereotype. I mean, it's such a dumb stereotype. And so I just so disagree with it. And if you're going to make a film about men's madness, just make a film about men's madness. Don't try to then have the second part of the film be about women's love. It's like, it felt to me like two different movies where I was like, why do we have to see this now? And I don't want to spoil the movie to people who haven't watched it, but I thought the ending was, it made me upset because I was like, are you serious? Is this what is happening after all of this, after suffering so much? So then women are all also women are very civilized, because of course women cannot show anger. They cannot express it. They have to repress it. They have to persist. They have to be all these things that I just don't think are productive to impose on women. And in that sense, I think it's a very stereotypical portrayal of femininity and a very stereotypical portrayal of masculinity, where it's like, why this divide? And the fact that there are two different parts devoted to each perspective makes me feel like the divide is just like stronger than if it was like somehow more, you know, mixed into the movie. So the first part is a movie about men, and the second part of it is a movie about women, basically. And I was just not buying that. I did not like it. But, you know, I do think I enjoyed watching it, and I do think it's like definitely one of the best movies of last year, but there were also a lot of great movies that I thought were, you know, like really valuable, like Cinco Lobitos was 100% my favorite.
Well, a film which I watched last night was also set in Galicia is Matria. And I mean, this obviously does have, it's a social realist film. It reminded me somewhat of like some of the Dardenne brothers, so, you know, sort of that type of social realist. We're both obviously coming with a strong strong feminist perspective as well. I mean, it's a gripping film. It's only about 95 minutes long, and you know, it's not certainly the first hour in, so it's gripping, but it's maybe not an easy watch in the sense that this, why I think I brought up the Dardenne is it sort of reminded me a little bit of that film, was it Dos Días Una Noche, 2 days, one night, or whatever it was in English, the stress, the frantic nature of precarious working class life. So how did you see Matria?
So Matria is a movie based on a short of the same title, also Matria. I think it's actually on filming as well. And the short won a lot of awards. And so after that short, Álvaro Gago, the director, decided to make the movie. And it's the story of this woman, Ramona, it's her story, but it really is the story of all those like strong women whom society does not really see or completely ignored by society. And it's women who work double shifts, who take care of the house, who take care of the children. And nobody really cares. And so I think it shows us from a very honest, also from a very delicate perspective, also from a very realistic, like hyper-realistic perspective, what these women's lives are like from the perspective of Ramona, kind of from the moment they wake up and go to work until the moment they go to bed, and what their relationships are like, what their friendships are like. It's like, you know, their day-to-day is basically their day-to-day. It could be a documentary. But it's, you know, fiction. And I think one of the things that really struck me about this movie was the acting. The acting was just amazing. The photography was incredible as well. And I thought that Álvaro Gago really knew what he was doing, really knew. He just did a very good job, like going into this woman's life and like being like putting himself in her shoes. And in fact, he worked with Ramona, the real, it's based on a real
woman. Oh, is it? Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He worked with her a lot. And the main actress also worked with her a lot in order to get that right. And so it's like, yeah, like a window into her life and a window into her struggles. And I think it's about class, it's about gender, it's about, you know, it's about a personal story as well. It's about motherhood, about toxic relationships with men. It just touches upon many different things. You know, like work also for sure. Yeah. And exploitation of women in many different sectors, right? Because this woman Ramona, she works at a factory where they're like completely ignoring the rights of the woman working at the factory. We've seen it more recently, so maybe you can talk more about this. But she's also like in, you know,
She
fishing.
works on fishing, fishing trawlers. I mean, she has about three jobs, but it's, yeah, the stuff at the factory is very interesting, obviously, because she's a cleaner in a factory. So it's a fish processing factory. And she's on the cleaning staff who are sort of, I think about 20 minutes into the film, half an hour, told that they're all going to be fired, but they could be rehired as outsourced cleaning staff for a lower wage. And there's a sort of standoff with the people owner of the factory, et cetera. You know, he's in that, you know, it's like pink, is you know, his client's pink shirt, et cetera, saying that everyone's putting in the same amount of effort into the collective endeavor, which is the business, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, I mean, the main performance from Maria Vasquez is incredible. And I think the sense,
She's
you know,
amazing.
just she is incredible. She changes, like, her interactions with She's very different with very different people. Her, you know, her sort of joking persona at the factory with her colleagues, then her sort of fractious relationship with both her partner and her daughter, that are very distinct as well. And then these sort of tender moments, well, with the daughter, but also particularly with her sister, and which, you know, she changes, her personality changes in these different situations. And yeah, I mean, I think it's, as you're saying, yeah, there's not that many films about, I guess, working class Spain in general, but yeah, from I guess a contemporary what life as a working class woman in contemporary Galicia is like,
And
before
the violence
the
that they're
violence.
constantly subjected to. I think it's
I
a,
mean,
to
that's
me,
it.
if
Yeah,
you
some of
want to
the
see what the movie's about, is a movie about violence. And it's not the kind of violence that we see in As Bestas, right? Like physical violence or bullying and that kind of stuff, like a very masculine sort of violence, but it's like the violence that working class women are subjected to through different mechanisms of discrimination. So they're discriminated against because they're women, first of all. They're discriminated against because they're poor. They're discriminated against because they're working class. Then there's also the element of sexual violence in this movie with
Yeah, I mean,
the
wait,
couple.
what exactly? What when you were saying we see her from the moment she wakes up to the moment she goes to sleep, even going to sleep is a sort of site of struggle and trying to fend off her sort of, you know, busy alcoholic partner, is, you know, repeatedly, you know, even in the morning as well. So it's an interesting film, and then there are these moments of sort of quietness in, or you know, where the tension sort of subsides for brief glimpses, and then there's a And maybe not a hopeful ending, but an ending which, you know, at least maybe slightly breaks the cycle. Or the ending actually reminded me, trying to remember the name of the film. It's the classic Fellini film with his wife, late 50s, early 60s, where she's on the train leaving at the end. Her face. I mean, it's
I don't know
he
what one it is.
made two incredible films with his wife. You know, his wife was one of the great comic actors in the 20th century. La Strada's the most famous, and then there's a second one. I actually can't remember which one it was, but they I don't know. But they're both classics. They're both incredible. But the ending of one of those two films ends on a sort of close-up of his wife's face, the changing expressions, and it's somewhat reminiscent of the end of Matri in that sense.
Oh, I want to search for it now. I'll search for it later. Now that I brought up sexual violence, I don't want to not mention also that there are this year a lot of amazing movies made by women have been released, and some of them tackle the issue of sexuality and female sexuality in particular. And there's one, Creatura, which I want to recommend, which is about the repression of female sexuality and its consequences, both in the sexual realm and outside of it, because I think our sexuality dictates also how we relate to other people outside of, you know, outside of sexual relationships or interactions. And so I thought this was a very interesting movie. I also I'm also thinking now that I just remembered Mama Cruz is also a really good movie. This one is about the sexuality of older people, and specifically of older women, and it's set in Sevilla. in Semana Santa, which is kind of ironic. It's very funny. It's a very funny movie, but it's also like, you know, what's underneath is very serious, which is how we forget about ourselves and we forget that we have bodies and that those bodies can give us pleasure, and how older women sort of are completely dedicated to other people and they're never really dedicated to themselves. And I think, you know, sex is not something that has to do with, other people. I think it mainly has to do with oneself, right? And so I think Mama Cruz and Creatura both do a really good job discussing these topics in a very complex way and, you know, taking into account the different perspectives. I would actually recommend that people watch both of them, you know, on the same day, or like one of them first and the other one next, because I think it's really interesting to compare them. I think Mama Cruz did not get nominated for many Goyas. Creatura did pretty well. Let's see if, you know, let's see what happens. But Mama Cruz didn't. But Mama Cruz has won a few awards already, and I think has been doing really well at festivals. I think it was, it came out for the first time at Sundance, which is pretty big. And both these movies are in my top 5 or 10 favorite movies of the year, for sure. So I just wanted to recommend those two because I think they're very interesting.
Anything else, any other recommendations for the year? Obviously, we're looking at, you know, in terms of this gender perspective, another film I saw recently was Las Chicas Están Bien, which is a, you know, a really nice film. It's, I think, 90 minutes long. Another summer film. And a sort of deconstruction, I guess, of various things. I mean, one of the lines in the film is the camera is a woman, which I think, yeah, obviously that's, you know, sort of flipping things on its head. The director, so first off, she's a well-known actor. Remind me of her name. I should have it down.
It's Azuarana.
Exactly. Yeah. So she's obviously probably best known internationally, La Virgen de Agosto, mm-hmm. Which was I think did quite well internationally. What is your take on this film?
You know, I know one of the main actresses because we.
Oh, do you? Okay.
Yeah, we went to the same theater school. I studied acting for some years, but anyway, and then we were taking yoga classes together, and I remember she told me that this movie was going to come out, and I was like, oh my god, like. Does it have like any political messages and stuff? Because I was, at the time I was working Canal Red and I had my show, and I, you know, was very interested in exploring movies that had political messages and sort of deconstructing them, sort of, you know, interviewing directors and actors about them and trying to sort of approach film from a different perspective to the ones that we usually get from film critics that are, you know, very often they do touch upon some political messages, but they don't go super in depth because that's not the focus. And that was my focus. That's what my show was about, sort of. So I asked her and she was like, no, it's not very political. And then I watched it and I was like, no, it's not very political, but
directly
it does deconstruct a lot of things, like the male gaze, like this idea that women are supposed to compete against each other. Well, I just feel like this is important. This was important for me, right? Because when you watch a movie about five women who go spend, I don't know, a weekend at a house together, you expect there to be some drama. You expect them to fight for some stupid reason. Like, why would they fight? There's like, they could fight, but they could also not fight. And that was my expectation. And so that's my internalized misogyny, I guess, you know, It's like, oh, they're gonna compete. Suddenly a guy, shows up and I'm like, oh God, like what if something? And then I was like, no, like this is not what the film is about. It's like none of that. It's not about that. It's a fairy tale that is also a deconstruction of fairy tales. But it's like its own sort of 21st century fairy tale of, about friendship, about love, about not romantic love, but just love, about human connections and about connections amongst women and about women supporting other women. And that's it. And that is very interesting. Sometimes there doesn't have to be a conflict for things to be interesting. And this is a film that doesn't really have a conflict. It has a lot of conflicts that are the conflicts of the people who we are watching in the film because they have a lot of stuff going on in their lives. But it's about them reflecting about things together and having the script of that movie is just so good, in my opinion. There's a conversation about death that I found to be very eye-opening, where I was like, oh my God, like this is should be taught in like philosophy classes. It's so good. And it's so not pretentious. That's what I like about this movie.
I did enjoy exactly. No, I did like it. And it is all those things. It's very watchable, really enjoyable. And there is a certain tradition and genre of that, of like of films where you don't need conflict. It's about five people or five women in this case. I think there's no men appear on screen for the first hour. And I mean, it does remind me, I think I guess of some of the films of the director of La Vergine de Agosto, who I think is a producer in the film. His films in the more not so much in, necessarily in the content, but just more in the sense it's not narrative driven. And you don't have to have, it's not just a question of conflict. It's just like it's not a narrative. Like if you're going to see a story and you want to see a story that begins here and ends there, it's not a narrative driven film. And I quite like those type of films. So yeah, no, I enjoyed it.
I remember I went to watch the movie to the movie theater with my little brother. And he came with me. And when I explained to him what the movie was about, he was like, oh God, this is going to be like, I don't know. He was like, I don't think I'm going to love this. And I was like, well, just whatever, just watch it. And we sat down and we started watching. And then I remember I was wanting to cry the entire time. I don't know if I did. I think both me and my brother were crying by the end. But it was like, we're not crying because we were sad. We were crying because we were really connecting with every single conversation those women were having in the movie because it's like so easy to connect with the things that they're saying. I mean, you don't have to be a woman to connect to those things because
No.
there are things that they're universal. It touches upon so many universal topics like love, like death, like motherhood, like all kinds of things like, what is acting? It's another topic that I thought was very interesting. It's like, what is acting? And I love that it's so meta. And then we left the movie theater in complete silence and we like didn't really talk for a while. And then I was like, wow, like, what do you think about the movie? And he was like, I loved it. What about you? And I was like, I loved it too. And that's all we said. We were just like really in our own worlds thinking because it really makes you think about all these deep topics that like maybe in your day-to-day life you're not thinking about very much because you don't have time. But then it's like, wow, like this is actually sort of the, like a very central issue for everybody. And of course we're all interested in those things, that's why the classics always tackle those sorts of issues like love and death and blah blah blah, and big topics that we all care about very much and that we can all say something interesting about. So yeah, that's
And
another movie.
I think what you're saying is right, is that it's not a pretentious film. I mean, none of the films we've talked about are pretentious. They're all extremely engaging, extremely, interesting films. But yeah, I mean, obviously there's a sense, a lot of these have had, big success in Spain, some internationally, but on the so-called art house scene or whatever. And there is there is so much great cinema being made internationally in Spain and elsewhere, and all that is, you know, is perfect for a mass audience, but maybe sometimes doesn't quite reach it just because of distribution and questions of, yeah, like, only blockbusters make it to the multiplexes or whatever. Whereas, I mean, these films are, you know, there's nothing difficult. I mentioned Godard or someone like that, you know, his films are at times just painful to sit through, but you know, these are really just engaging, brilliant cinema.
I could not agree more.
I mean, we probably should, before we finish, because we haven't touched on some of the other films that are up. We haven't seen all of them, but some of the films that are up for the Goyas. I mean,
La Nieve.
Exactly. So is it correct? Because I've only seen the trailer. I'm not sure if it has been released in Spain yet, but it's based on the plane crash involving that Argentinian rugby team. Is it the same story, or is it a...
I know very little about it, to be honest.
There's a famous English language film called Alive, based on a plane crash of an Argentinian rugby team. Just from the trailer, it seemed like it was the same story. I wasn't sure if it was directly. I was like, okay. I think it's the other main contender, maybe, or it's certain, but
it's what that plane crash that happened in, I think, in Chile in the 1970s. But I don't really know a lot about it because I haven't watched it, and so I haven't wanted to read much about. I don't want to spoil the film. But what I do know about it is that, I don't know if it's on Netflix or if it's going to be on Netflix, but I do know that it has been nominated for the Golden Globes, and it's also the candidate to represent Spain at the Oscars.
Okay.
So it's a pretty big deal, and my prediction is that it's going to do very well at the Goyas for that reason. Let's see what happens at the Oscars, because we're not really making it to the Oscars much lately. But yeah, I don't know very much about it. I think yesterday I was on Twitter, and then I saw this picture of, like, all the weight that the actors lost for this movie.
Jesus.
Which was pretty crazy to me. But yeah, I can't speak very much about this movie because I haven't seen it, so I don't want to say anything that's not correct. I also haven't watched Cerrar los Ojos.
Okay.
It is my intention to watch it, and I think it'll also do very well at the Goyas. It also has a ton of nominations. And then there's Un Amor, which I am very sad that I have not had the chance to watch yet, because I'm a huge fan of Isabel Goyet and also a huge fan of Laia Costa. Laia Costa a person who played the main character in Cinco Lobitos, and she's just such a good actor. So I really want to watch those films. And I also watched Upon Entry recently, which also has a few nominations. And it's funny about Upon Entry, because it's about a couple trying to enter the U.S. They're trying to move there. Because of, you know, this green card lottery that one of them has won. And so they're trying to move to the U.S. and they arrive in the U.S. and they're at the airport and customs, like going through customs. But then they end up getting interrogated. And it was terrifying to watch for me, because I've been in that position before, where they have, the people at customs have suspected that I was going to try to stay there. And it was the most terrifying experience I've had. And I thought it was very interesting, in terms of, you know, seeing this in terms of privilege, because there are two people there are two characters, right? Two main characters in the movie. So there's the guy who's from Venezuela, and then there's, like, the woman who's from Barcelona. And it's funny because they keep saying, oh, you're from Spain, it's just like Barcelona. And they're like, Spanish, like, no, I'm from Barcelona. But anyway, basically, I thought it was very interesting at first because then stuff happens, right? But at first, I thought it was very interesting the way he behaves in that situation, the way she behaves in that situation, because she's not used to being interrogated and she's not used to being perceived as an other because she's European and she's white. I mean, he's also white, but, you know, he's a white Venezuelan. But the fact that in the U.S. he is perceived as a Latino man, the treatment is so different. And the way that he approaches the situation of being interrogated, he's constantly like, please don't do anything to upset them, because if you upset them, then they're going to fuck you over. And, you know, like, and she's like, what? No, but like, why am I in this position? Why am I being interrogated? Like, I don't understand, like, all these things, right? So it's very interesting to see the contrast, especially because I lived it and I was in a position similar to hers where I was like, wait, why is anyone going to suspect anything of me? I'm just a white girl. Which is so stupid. It's so stupid.
Yeah.
But of course, when you're constantly treated like someone who's like, yeah, nobody's ever suspected that I was going to steal anything at a store. Nobody's ever suspected that I was going to do anything illegal, right? But when you are from a different place, when you are not a white person, essentially, or not a European person, or not a privileged person like I am, or like that character is in the movie, you approach these things very differently. You're not like just really mad and feel like it's really unfair. You feel all those things, but you're like, oh God, like you become more submissive because you understand what is at risk. And the people who are not usually exposed to being treated in that way, and they're treated in that way for the first time in their lives maybe, are like, what the hell? What's happening? Like, why am I being treated that way? I don't deserve this. So I think it could be helpful for those people who maybe have not been in those positions to understand how other people are being treated constantly in their lives just because they're from a place that's not considered to be part of this, what did Borrell call it? The European garden.
The garden, yeah, exactly. She's only terrible.
Yeah, but it's, you know, like, that's kind of how it is. So I do think that's a good movie upon entry. I enjoyed it. It's not, I wouldn't say it's among my favorite ones of the year because I have a lot of favorites, but it was definitely entertaining.
Perfect. So it's been a good year. I mean, I think most of our listeners are international. Some of these films, you know, I mean, that's why I sort of wanted to talk about Asbestos this year, because I know a lot of people will have seen it in the last 12 months. And I think what we're telling our international listeners is there's a lot more interesting Spanish cinema coming their way in the next 6 months, probably.
Oh yeah. A lot of it. I think there's a lot, and I think it's only going to get better.
Great. Well, that's a good place to end, I think. You know, I mean, it's, let's see what the next 12 months bring. But yeah, I think each of the films we've talked about today, they're interesting, they're engaging, and yeah, I mean, hopefully when some of them are released internationally in the spring, they get a good audience in the States or elsewhere in Europe. So thanks a lot, Anisha.
No, thank you so much for having me. Anytime.
Great. No, it's been a really interesting conversation.